Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests. Ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. My name is Karen Watts, also known as Karen at petoftheday.com, and we have with us today our first guest is Glenn Drown from the Sandhill Preservation Center, where he raises and maintains 235 different breeds of poultry, so that's chickens and ducks and geese and turkeys, and too many seeds, rare and heirloom seeds, to even count.
And boy, and I can't wait to hear all about them and how you got going, Glenn, and how you got started and how long ago you did this. And just start right from day one, because, boy, I'll tell you, I'm really interested in hearing all about this. You've been my number one target here for a while.
Okay, I guess I got started when I moved to Iowa in 1988. I had, or 1984, excuse me, and I couldn't have my own property for a few years. And finally, by the time I got my farm in the fall of 1988, I went on my search to regain chickens and turkeys and everything, and discovered that since I'd left Idaho in the mid-80s, that the chicken population of the world had declined drastically. And so what started out to just going to be me having my little farm with raising seeds and just having a colorful flock of mixed birds turned into sort of a passion of trying to gather up all of these rare and endangered breeds that were slipping through our fingers at a rapid pace. So, I mean, to give one example, in 1984 when I left Idaho, I had a list of 20 breeders of Jersey Buff turkeys. And when I started calling those the minute I bought my farm in 88, I couldn't find any of them that still had them. They disappeared through that. So it kind of just grew and grew and grew from just, you know, as fast as I could put up pens, I was trying to locate birds from old folks that were getting rid of them or couldn't take care of them anymore, and it just kind of expanded out of control almost. So
pretty successful now, it sounds like.
Yeah, from one wish to 235 different breeds, that's a bit of an expansion.
Yeah. I guess so. Now, Glenn, do you sell these?
It takes several acres of just sheds, let alone pens for runways for the waterfowl and the turkeys and the birds that take more space than chickens.
So. Uh-huh. Now, you sell these, right? You raise them and you sell these also, right?
Yes. You know, they do eat a lot. We go through a little over 6 tons of feed every 2 weeks, and so that does take a bit of a, you know, have to find some way to compensate for that. So, yes, we sell day-old baby chicks. And we do sell a few adults locally, but mostly I try to sell the day-old through the mail. And we've shipped chicks all the way from the outermost parts of Alaska to Puerto Rico to every state in the United States. And when I say chicks, I should say babies of all of the different fowls. So.
Now, what do you have more of, chickens or ducks or geese, or is it a blend of kind of even?
Oh, we have way more chickens, perhaps, than anything else, though. We have probably most every breed of domestic goose. We just have more numbers in chickens and more breeds of chickens because there's so many more of them out there than there are of the other things. There was a point in time when we had pretty much all of the types of turkeys, but there are other folks out there now who are doing more with turkeys, and there just is a limit to how much one can do in a day. So I've kind of limited that to about 16 different types of naturally mating turkeys and, you know, part of our combination on the farm.
Now, what would you call the rarest turkey in existence today? Is it like the chocolate or the blue slate, one of them? Am I in the ballpark?
Yeah, it's really interesting you should ask that, because if you go back to, 15, 20 years ago, finding chocolate turkeys was a real rare event, and now, thanks to some of our efforts and some of the people that we worked with, we've gotten those out into circulation where there's quite a few of them now being sold by larger concerns, and that's a great relief for me. I suppose probably the rarest one that is considered a breed that's not considered a cross would be the Jersey Buff. They haven't quite made it back to the point where In the 1950s, there was a census taken by the Department of Agriculture, and there were over 50,000 breeders, I think, in the state of California alone at that point in time. And by the time you got to 1990, we were down to maybe 20 turkeys total in the United States of that breed. So they've come back, but they haven't made that final leap back into popularity yet. So that's probably our rarest.
I've never even heard of them. They're called a Jersey Buff?
Jersey Buff. They were developed late 1800s, early 1900s as a nice butchering turkey because they had pale pin feathers. So when you butchered them, you don't have those dark stains in the meat.
Right.
And it took off rather rapidly and gained quite a bit of popularity until the modern broad-breasted whites came along in the 40s and 50s. It sort of started surpassing all of the heritage turkeys, and now we're kind of making a little swing back where people realize that the heritage turkeys, those naturally mating types, are probably a little more flavorful and a little more heartier, and they have a few other attributes that the broad-breasted whites don't. I mean, they don't get as big, which is a drawback for some, but yet they take a lot less inputs to get some nice outflow of some very delicious-tasting meat.
Yeah, I raise the broad-breasted whites around here, and, you know, 17, 18 weeks, they're up almost 30 pounds, you know. And now, at 17, 18 weeks, are these ready to go to market, or it takes longer probably for a heritage, right?
No. Any of your naturally mating turkeys really take a good 24 to 26 weeks to reach a marketable weight, and they're still not going to be as big as those broad-breasted whites. When you're talking at 24 weeks, you're talking a male turkey probably dressing out 18 to 20 pounds maximum. Maybe some would be a little bigger. Kind of depends on how much they've gotten to roam around and how much you fed them, and, you know, a few other little caretaking things. I think the big selling point is that length of time it takes to mature adds some flavor to your meat. And once you've tasted them, you'll really know the difference because of the texture of the meat is a little different. It's not quite as loose. It's a little firmer, and the flavor is just outstanding.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, the other my other favorite rare chicken I was always looking for, and I was after Craig Russell for this, is red caps. Do you have any of those, the red cap chickens?
Yes, we do. Red caps is something that has been one of my fondest ones to keep for a long time. I had those when I was a youngster and out west, and missed them when I moved out here. And they are just a unique bird. They've got spunk. That big comb is fabulous when you get it going, especially on the males. But it can also be, if you don't have good weather conditions, when it gets below zero, it can also be a hazard for them because it freezes fairly easily, because there's so much of it out there that, you know, it just makes it very hard on the birds if you don't have a good warm environment for them. So
it would be better for Joe down in Florida than it would be for me up in Boston.
Right. Florida would be their dream home as far as, you know, not having their comb damaged. You could probably get some fairly decent combs on them that would not get frostbitten, and they would look gorgeous. Up in Boston, probably still look better than some of mine look after we have an Iowa winter where it gets 25 below zero sometimes.
Yeah. Well, red caps are on my list. Those are my next rare chickens. I have the golden campines now, which I absolutely love. And and I have the white face Spanish, and now I want to get some red caps, and then I want to do the rare turkey things. And I wasn't sure what kind of turkeys. I didn't know whether to go with a blue slate, the chocolate. And now I'm hearing about this Jersey Buff. Now, you know, and there's no pictures of them in any of these breeder books or anything. I can't find a picture of a Jersey Buff.
You can't, and that's unfortunate. And I do know that ALBC took some pictures, and they have some pictures. There may even be some online now of Jersey Buffs, because they came out in the late 1990s and took a bunch of pictures of the rare turkeys. And I know the chocolates were, you know, hotly sought after for a while, and now, fortunately, like I said, they're a little more popular. And blue slates have always got a fond spot in my heart. They are very gentle, docile birds, and that color is just gorgeous on them.
Gentlemen, we are running out of time for this segment. Glenn, will you stick with us?
That flew by.
Sure will.
That flew by.
I knew that once the two of you got talking, the time would just fly right by. We will be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show, which, of course, talks about ducks and geese and other kinds of poultry, too, here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Now you can walk and exercise your pet, no matter what your condition, using the bike tow leash. There is nothing like the bike tow leash. It easily attaches to bicycles, electric scooters, and other mobility equipment. It acts like an extra left arm to communicate and to control your pet in the healing position. You can install it in minutes. The bike tow leash is recommended by trainers and used by owners and working dog handlers of all kinds. So now you can get out and have fun and exercise your pet very safely. Go to our website, www.allpawspettalk.com, and go to the sponsor page and hit the bike tow leash banner, or call toll-free 857-245-3364. That number once again, toll-free 857-245-3364.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We have with us Glenn Drown from the Sand Hill Preservation Center. And we were talking about rare turkeys and rare breeds of chickens. Now, you also have geese, you were saying, Glenn?
So we do have some Hemdens and some Toulouse and some Africans. And I like to keep some of the more common ones just to kind of compare growth rates and other factors to see that some of the older breeds or the more rare ones, so that you can kind of keep track of inbreeding and things like that, to notice traits like laying patterns and laying egg size and things like that. And I love the white Chinese, and we have brown Chinese geese, and we have Shetlands and gray and buff saddleback Pomeranians, and we have old-fashioned Pomeranians and buffs and pilgrims and, you know, Roman Tufteds and a whole bunch. So,
my neighbor just gave me a white Chinese. His name is Gary, and he's a troublemaker, and I've already got a black and blue mark on my arm from Gary. Biting me. And I don't know if I can ever calm him down. Do they ever calm down, or is it,
you know, that's really interesting. White Chinese, I think can be the friendliest goose in the world. My flock is just very calm. I use them. I'm a biology teacher, and I use them for imprinting studies with my students. I take them in and when they're day old and let them, bond with each student. And it's funny how those geese become so tame and docile that they'll follow the kids around for the 2 weeks that they keep them, and then I usually get them back, and maybe that's why my flock is fairly tame, because most of them have come from those projects that I take them, and then they've kind of been pampered, so they're, mine have never bit me. I've had some Hemdens and some others, that some Sebastopols that have taken some good chunks out of my hide, but I've never had trouble with the white Chinese. So,
Do you think that this one will calm down? It's about a year old. But he's pretty independent,
and I
only have the one.
You know, one thing, Glenn, I was going to ask you when you were talking about the turkeys that were down to about 20, is there any problem when you're bringing back these rare breeds? Is there any problem with genetics? You know, is it ever a gene pool too small to bring a breed back?
Yes, it sure can be, and it has been a struggle with the Jersey Buff, just from that standpoint, and that's probably what's taken them a while. We worked for Paula Johnson in New Mexico, and I worked back and forth for about 6 years with the chocolate turkey population was that low as well. And
wow.
So we spent some serious time working with that and trying to figure out, you know, what the heritage was, and to try to introduce new blood from different sources of other breeds to try to stabilize that, but without damaging the credibility of that breed. And so it takes a little time and it takes a little work. And with some of the chicken breeds that we started out with, I know in about 1992 or 3, we did the same thing with Partridge Chanticleers. They were down to about 8 birds in this country. And
oh my God.
We worked with those and got them back, you know, to where they're fairly respectable and they're in fairly good numbers now. But yes, when you get down low like that, you've got a lot of of genetics issues. And like I said, I'm a biologist, too. So, you know, working with that, it kind of helps to have that training, too.
Uh-huh. Now, have we lost any breeds recently, you know, from, you know, the genetics not being able to breed them back, turkeys or chickens lately?
I would say, yes, we probably have lost some. There's a few birds out there that it's really difficult to find. I'm not sure they're totally lost, but probably so. I mean, it was the big thing, and Craig Russell probably talked to you about this, the Lamona chicken, whether or not we found those again or not. They slipped down to numbers and were very difficult to find. I know we lost some during the 80s that probably will never come back, or if they are, they're another, you know, there may be some in overseas, but a lot of cases, like in the turkey population, some of the American breeds do survive in England and Britain, or in England and mainland Europe, excuse me, but we don't have them here in the United States yet, even though they were developed here. So.
Is there any way to get them back from England over here, or can you do that? I was wondering. You know,
can you? It's pretty expensive. You have to go through the quarantine system, and it's probably, as I've been told, about $1,000 a bird to get them back into the country, you know, just for the quarantining part. Now, that may have changed recently, but that's what it was a few years back when a bunch of us were thinking we needed to get the, it's called the Nebraskan Royal Turkey, which was developed in Nebraska in the early 1900s, which is now still in England, but not in this country. We wanted to get those back, but kind of cost prohibitive unless you've got, you know, a good foundational money to support a cause like that.
Now, I wasn't aware that it would be that expensive coming back. I know that when people are trying to move with their pets, my husband and I run a website for pets, that it's very difficult to bring a dog or a cat to the UK, but taking them out of the UK is no big deal because they're an island nation. They worry about rabies and all sorts of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people who have, I know one young woman who basically brought her two cats that she loved dearly and gave them to her parents in Spain because there was a much shorter quarantine time and she couldn't face her two beloved spoiled house cats sitting for over a year in a cage somewhere in London. But there's quarantine coming back for like poultry?
I think the quarantine, unless it's changed recently, but I know when I looked into it in around year 2000 was all livestock. That's where you get in, you know, the difference between perhaps pets and,
birds.
You know, and turkeys. Even though turkeys can be a pet, I guess, in some cases. It was if it's a livestock type thing, it had to stay in quarantine, and I believe Belleville, Maryland, for a period of time. And that I think that is different for cats and dogs. Because I know my wife's parents went back and forth to Belgium for a while when he was working there, and they had a pet, I believe, that they took back and forth. So I think it's a little different for pets than what they look at anything as a food animal. And I'm sure that's all changed recently, too, since 9/11 with some of the, you know, terrorist-type activities worried about agri-terrorism and stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many people do you have working for you? You don't do this alone, obviously, right? You know, all of these.
My wife and I do most of it. I do have students that work for me. You know, sometimes after school, and then on weekends, we work on weekends cleaning all the pens because that takes quite a job. And
I know
the poultry aspect of it. Yes, there's a couple, three students that I employ on a regular basis to help me keep things clean, and then I have one student who helps me sort eggs, because all the eggs get marked with a code, and there's 235 codes to learn to get marked, you know, and so there's a person that does that. Basically, it's kind of a full-time job for me outside of my full-time teaching job.
Boy, I guess so. Sounds it. Wow. So how many coops do you have, different coops and sizes of your coops? I'm trying to compare them to my farm here to see if we're on the same page.
A while back, and I think there's at least 165 different pens, because in some cases, and there may be more than that, in some cases I'll have a chicken, a duck, a goose, and a guinea hen all breed all in one big pen, so they have a large runway. I know there's more than 165, and then there's all the young grow-out pens, and then there's the breeding or the brooder pens for the young babies and things like that. There's three sheds for that, and there's three or four sheds for range brooders, And the only thing I can tell you exactly is I have 15 pens that are strictly for turkeys with large runways because they need their space to be happy. And that one,
yeah, I was going
to
ask you, how big are your runways for your turkeys? Or, you know, how big
is it? For about a dozen turkeys, I try to keep about a 20 by 50 to 75 foot outside runway plus an inside shed that gives them some break from the moisture and the, you know, in the wind here in Iowa.
Okay. So, all right, because I run an 80.
Florida,
yeah,
I do 80. Cold.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess we're pretty close there. Because I shot from the hip when I made my turkey pen. And I made it, it was 18 feet because I came out even on the lumber and I went out 80 feet with a barn in the middle. So I guess I'm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I keep a few more turkeys in there than you do. And they don't seem to be crowded. Of course, we don't keep them long, you know, but.
Yeah. Breeder birds like a little space. I guess the heritage types like to move around a little bit. And then this time of the year, we're just gearing up. We had a fairly nice day today. It got to about 40 degrees. And so the male turkeys were all thinking spring, and they were all strutting. And it's rather pretty and colorful to see those, you know, different colored birds all strutting around. And but they also like a little more space to move around and show off.
You get all those tails spread out, it does take up a lot of space. Gentlemen, we are running out of time for this segment. Glenn, will you stick with us?
Sure.
Well, we will be right back with more All Paws Pet Talk Country Joe's Chicken Show.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk. And we have with us again Glenn Drown from the Sandhill Preservation Center. And we were just talking about the different things that can go wrong with the chickens and the ducks and the turkeys and the geese. And how do you deal with that, Glenn, when you have so many different kinds of rare and heirloom birds around?
Well, that's a really good question. I guess that's something that's because, you know, I am a biologist and science and that is my forte, I guess. It always concerns me from the time I was first started raising chickens as a small child. If something goes wrong, I wanted to know why and what I could do to help. And
that's why you're a scientist.
I guess was talking about Bumblefoot, and that was one of the first things I encountered, and to try to do things like that. I do try to keep up on things like that and to monitor, and I know you mentioned the Chicken Health Handbook, which is a valuable source, but as I understand, you know, it can overwhelm a person who doesn't have a science background. You look at that and you kind of freak out and get paranoid about how many diseases and things that can happen.
I do all the time.
A wonderful job of covering as many possibilities, but most people don't have to worry about getting all of those or seeing most of those in their lifetime. I mean, there's just a few that crop up, and depending upon the region of the country. I know when I did the book for Story Publishing on raising poultry, I tried to cover just the basic biggies, as I call them, that people might encounter, and like Bumblefoot, and there's a few others that you see that you can deal with on a backyard scale without a lot of vet help in many cases. In some cases, you may have to consult a vet. It kind of depends on your level of expertise. But but chickens probably and turkeys are the ones that get the most problems.
I was going to ask, of all your birds, which are the ones that most likely to have something go wrong? Are turkeys pretty much immune to these things, or geese, or?
Turkeys are probably the thing that I guess turkeys and chickens both, but turkeys get a lot of problems, mainly with respiratory problems, if you try to overtake care of them. They like a little bit of open, fresh air, and if you keep them too confined in a building where the moisture level builds up, you're going to end up with a lot of respiratory problems with turkeys. And then they can pick up some diseases from chickens.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's not talk about the disease. Yeah, the diseases that the turkeys can catch from the chickens. What's that, blackfoot or whatever? Is that the disease
it's
I'm thinking of?
It's called blackhead. And really,
Mm-hmm.
The turkey doesn't get a blackhead. It just gets really dark colored, I guess, or pale. It almost gets pale, really, as they pass away. I mean, it's not something that we can take care of in this country anymore because they've taken all the medicines off the market.
Wow.
But, I mean, you can really recognize the turkey starts going downhill. They get yellowish. It almost looks like mustard-colored droppings, and they just kind of droop, and it just destroys their liver and their intestines, and it's just kind of an ugly mess when they die. But that's regionally, you can see a lot of that in some areas. Other areas, you don't see it as much. And there are advantages to raising turkeys and chickens together when they're little because the turkeys then tend to keep the chickens from getting Merrick's disease. But then at the same time, it's where you get into the blackhead is when you have turkeys being raised where adult chickens were the year before, and because it's a very complex life cycle.
That's why you got to keep them separated. That's what I do anyway. I try to keep the turkeys away from the chickens, the pens. Is that how you do it?
What's that? I'm sorry.
You keep your turkey pens away from your chicken pens.
I keep my adult turkey pens are on one end of the farm, and then the chickens are not near that. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, because you're dealing with some of the heritage breeds and some of the rare breeds, are some of the heritage turkeys better at warding off some of these illnesses, or worse?
Almost certainly. That's the thing that we learned real quickly. In 2002, we participated with the ALBC, American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, in a study comparing the broad-breasted white turkeys with heritage turkeys. And that was an eye-opening experience for me to have them in side-by-side pens to see how the heritage turkeys were able to withstand so many stresses that the broad-breasted whites could not, from heat stress to disease stress, to just general maintenance stress. It was amazing. We started out with 30 each of bourbon red, 30 black Spanish, 30 blue slate, and 30 broad-breasted whites, and weighed them each week and did weight studies and feed conversion studies as well as health studies. And the broad-breasted whites started getting diseases even though they were right next to the others. The others did not get those diseases. Since the end of the season, we were only successful to raising 5 of the broad-breasted whites, and we're pretty much successful getting, 29 or 30 of each of the others. It was kind of a real eye-opening experience to see the ability of some of those heritage breeds to withstand some respiratory things that came through. We had a real hot, humid summer that year, and the broad-breasted whites did not handle it well at all.
Yeah, is that because they gain so much weight so quick and the heritage don't? Is that a big factor in there too?
And their immune system just can't keep up with fighting off some of those diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I have a neighbor that has some broad-breasted whites that he kept over, and they literally go almost 50 pounds right now, the toms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's he doesn't know what to do with them. because they're eating him out of house and home. He's got 11 of them, and he tried to give them to me.
Oh, yeah. Said, no, it's like a small cow.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of food. I couldn't believe that these turkeys eat. And, I only raise them for 16, 18 weeks, the most, and I know what they go through.
Right. Boy. And when you carry them over, they eat a lot. It's like Cornish cross chickens the same way. If you can keep them over and keep them alive, they eat like small animal. I mean, small, large livestock, I should say.
Yeah, well, I do. I raise those too. I raise the meat chickens, and they suggest you pull the feet away. You only let them eat 10 to 12 hours and pull the feet because they'll eat. I know they'll eat all night long. When I first started this, they were doing that, and I come a long way doing this. Learn the hard way, I guess. But boy, I'm really interested in trying those Jersey Buff turkeys. Now you got me going on those. But I do want to get the red caps also. I've been looking all over. I went through the Heritage Poultry Breeder Directory, for red cap chickens, and I think I only found one person in there. And now that I know you got them, do you? when are they going to be available?
They'll be available probably as we get into the early spring. We've had kind of a long winter here, and like I said, that comb sticks up and they freeze. They're laying now, and they'll pick up as soon as we start getting into spring here in a couple weeks. They'll pick up pretty fast, and the fertility increases. When a chicken's comb freezes, it decreases the fertility some in some breeds more than others. And so they have to recover a little bit, but that usually bounces back fairly fast, and then you start getting a good hatch rate once things get going into the real spring. And that's kind of probably hard for you living in Florida to understand that. But,
yeah, I know. Today was like 85, you know. Yeah.
Yes, I'm the one northerner outlier of the All Paws Pet Talk crew, and they all delight in pointing out to me, you know, when it's 10 degrees and sleeting here, they're like, oh, it's 85 here.
I got my air conditioning on and my ceiling fans going right now. You know,
that's why when Glenn's red caps hear where you are, they'll all be like on the next flight.
Yeah. Yeah. They most certainly would like that. So.
But boy, that's interesting. Now, these other turkeys that I was interested in too were the slate turkeys. You also have those?
Yes, I do. They're one of my favorites. Like I said, they just have a different. People like to think all turkeys are the same, but blue slates are just almost what I call pet quality. In fact, we had one that was a reject from a zoo for a while that would follow me everywhere on the farm. I mean, he would follow me a quarter mile to the back fence and sneak up behind me and start gobbling. And they just, I think they're just a beautiful with that blue with those little black. Flecks in it are just a gorgeous bird, and they just have a different personality. The hens, if you spent time with them, anybody who wants a pet turkey, you could make a pet out of them very easily because they just are just relaxed, you know, and just have this nice disposition. And if you're looking for eating quality too, they're a nice eating bird as well. You know, they're just all around a beautiful bird with some functional purposes.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, because I got a pet turkey. Only mine's
actually. Yeah. Lucky was pet of the day on Thanksgiving this year. My husband and I, as I mentioned, do petoftheday.com. And Lucky was wearing his little chef's hat for his pet of the day picture.
The trauma day for turkeys, the season. So.
Well, Lucky's sign said eat more chicken. So.
Yeah, I made him a sign. But, he's a big broad-breasted, you know. And so we have fun with Lucky.
Well, guys, we are just about out of time. Glenn, will you stick with us for one more segment?
Sure.
Excellent. We'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. And we are talking with Toby from Crazy K Farms, who was just talking about diapers that you can get for chickens if you want to take them places, and how often you have to change a diaper is definitely chicken specific. And there was another product you wanted to tell people about, Toby. Why don't you start with that?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to mention was the crop bra, which it's a funny name, crop bra. I call it the birdie bra, crop bra. It's also a chest protector, but that was also a product that, like all my products, were created when somebody calls me and says, hey, can you make a crop bra? And I was like, what? And it wasn't until one of my hens had a problem, and I knew exactly what these poor people were going through. You take your poor chicken that has either a slow crop or crop stasis or a pendulous crop, whatever crop issue, you take this poor hen to the vet, and the vet says, okay, we're going to get that crop up, and takes a roll of vet wrap and just wraps your chicken up like a mummy.
Hmm.
And then says, change that every couple days. Wow. Oh,
yeah, I was going to say, how's the chicken react to that?
Unhappy girl. Very unhappy. And so we just literally just went to the store and bought different kinds of bandages, and then, you know, the bandages stretch in the X direction, not the Y direction, all kinds of R&D. And then I finally had this crop broth that worked on my hen, and she had to wear it for the rest of her life.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because once the crop gets stretched, so she had pendulous crop, and once it gets stretched to a certain point, the muscles don't retract. Yeah, they're mm-hmm. stretched out for good. And they cannot survive without having their crop lifted up. The food will just keep piling up in the crop and it won't make it into the stomach. So it is a life-saving device. It really is.
Mm-hmm. So do a lot of people buy these products? Have you noticed?
Yes. Yeah, yep. they buy them because they need them. And what we're finding more and more, which is really wonderful. In fact, a veterinarian came up to me at Global and told me that she had been referring people to my website.
Wow,
and why don't you tell us and our listeners what your website is, so that if they're interested in diapers or crop bras or any of your other products, they can find them.
And where you advertise also.
Oh, okay. Well, the website is hensaver.com. So www.hensaver.com. And then you can go look at the tabs at the top. And the hensaver, obviously, is the hen apron or hen saddle, as they call it. And mm-hmm. you can go look at the tab, and you can click into crop bra or click into diaper or click into the birdie booty. But I'm currently advertising, pretty much everywhere I can, Backyard Poultry, Chickens Magazine, Hobby Farms, just about everywhere. Trying to get the word out.
I know that there are more and more people all over the place getting, even people in cities and suburban areas getting into having backyard chickens. So they're going to find out that, you know, they need a booty for their chicken. I mean, who would think of that until you're presented with a chicken with a foot problem?
Boy, there you go. And what a necessity after you find out about it, right? You know?
The biggest problem I found is there's a lot of ignorance. Ignorance is not a bad thing. It just means you're not educated.
Right.
But people, especially in the chicken world, seem to be going out and trying to get educated as quickly as possible. But there's still, you've got people who think, okay, because I did this. You know, your chicken has a problem. I solved it. Other people want it. But you got to think for a minute, well, are you sure that that's something that's good for your chicken? So I noticed the other day, I had seen this. I hadn't thought much about it, but somebody came out with a chicken saddle that is quote-unquote waterproof. I didn't think much about it until one of my customers called me and said, hey, do you make a waterproof one? And I explained, well, no, because our device has been tested for years. And the reason we don't do that is because it's called a saddle for a reason. The roof's supposed to be able to hold on. If it's slippery, because if it's waterproof, it's got to be slick or slippery, the roost is going to slide off and potentially slice your hen's side open with his spurs. And she said, okay, well, that makes sense. But she went ahead and she bought it and called me in tears and said, oh, my God, that's what happened. I said, oh, my gosh, you know, buyer beware.
Yeah.
Just because it's on the market for chickens, this is such a new phenomena, having these backyard chickens, that people are coming out with products that aren't necessarily safe. So my only warning is, please buy from a reputable company or talk to other people about the quality of an item before you buy it.
Well, and that's one of the reasons we have, you know, we are doing Country Joe's Chicken Show is that, you know, to educate people out there on what the best things to do are and what the rare chickens are and things like bumblefoot and chickens.
Yeah, and how to take care of them. You know, because like you say, we're into the chicken health book, and anybody that's bought that, like I have, that's 340 pages thick. And wow, that can really throw you after you start reading all of those diseases. I never realized a chicken could get so much. Boy, that's interesting.
No, it is. It is. And a lot of times it's like anything. We're not veterinarians. And so you read a book like that, and you can see that, oh, okay, I'm looking over for things that affect the foot or things that affect the face. So, but there's so many things that it could be that it's just mind-boggling sometimes. It really is. And it is very hard to get educated, but we have to do our best and try to get as much information as we can.
But yeah, because I was reading, you know, I've got the book in front of me now, and I'm reading diseases here I can't even pronounce, you know, and I start reading them, and I'm going, wow, chickens really get this? You know, and Glenn,
and it's not chicken is going to walk up to you and say, you know, gee, Joe, I've been feeling a little peckish.
Yeah. Boy.
Yeah, they often don't do that at all. I don't know about what you guys have seen, but I've had, lately, we've had some real bad luck with sick chickens lately. As in cancer and things, melanoma, things we don't even see in chickens normally. So I've got a lot of girls. I've got a chicken with leukemia right now who's on chemotherapy.
Really?
But they hide it. Birds in general, because they're prey, not predators, they will hide their illness for as long as possible. So by the time they're looking pretty sick, like they don't feel well, they're way down that road of being ill.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
Because that happened to me just a couple of weeks ago. I had a chicken, and I kept watching her. She just didn't look right. You know, she's hanging on the coop and, like, sleeping, standing up, and, you know, and I ignored it, and then it was too late, you know. And I still to this day don't know what that was. I mean, it was the only one in the coop that did it. So it could be a variety of things. And I did look through the book after, the chicken health book, but I can't find anything in there that's even close. So you're right.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is.
We're lucky. Yeah, you know, we're lucky. I say lucky. Well, we live very close to a university that has it's a teaching hospital, and they take in chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, whenever we have anybody who's sick, I take them in there. We survive off a donation. Let me go back for a second and tell you that I don't take a salary from my business.
Mm-hmm.
We rescue chickens, mostly chickens, ducks, geese, et cetera, but mostly chickens. And the profits from the business go to the medical care for the chickens. And
wow,
we also take the donations.
Yeah.
So, so we do take every single chicken that gets ill, we take it up to Texas A&M. And if the chicken passes away, they will always ask us, hey, can we please perform a necropsy so we could learn about what this was.
And now, currently, how many chickens do you have?
We rarely have under 100.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and most of them are free range. Now, we take in these rescued livestock guardian dogs. So our rescued livestock guardian dogs guard our chickens. And while
and they're probably happy to have the job.
Well, they do. That's what they do. That's what they do. And you know, while I was at Global, there was a dog holding on to a chicken, which I'd never seen, and the farm sitter called me, and she said, your dog is got a chicken between his legs. I said, oh, my God, something's happened to that chicken. Either just saved it from a predator, or that chicken's very sick. Just run out there. And sure enough, the chicken had a broken leg.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Now, the dog's trained to do this, or do it on their own?
They do it on their own. It's innate. It's very interesting, and they guard the animals that they want to guard. We took in we took in three Great Pyrenees, and we didn't know what they were going to do because they came from a rescue, and they'd been picked up from a farm where the owner was in jail for abuse.
Uh-huh.
So we just literally put them in the paddock and said,
interesting,
go. And one ran to the sheep, one ran to the goats, and the other ran to the chickens. And that's what they've been guarding ever since.
And they are such instinctive guardians. You know, Toby, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We are just running out of time for this segment.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
On.
It's been a pleasure.
We learned quite a bit. It's very interesting. I learned a lot here.
And anybody who has any questions for Joe or any of our guests can go on to the allpawspettalk.com. That's allpawspettalk.com. allpawspettalk.com, and there's a form right there on the homepage. And if you ask a chicken question, I'm not going to try to answer it. We're going to direct that one right to Joe.
Folks, and I'm going to give it to Glenn.
We will be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show.
Now you can walk and exercise your pet no matter what your condition using the bike tow leash. There is nothing like the bike tow leash. It easily attaches to bicycles, electric scooters, and other mobility equipment. It acts like an extra left arm to communicate and to control your pet in the healing position. You can install it in minutes. The bike tow leash is recommended by trainers and used by owners and working dog handlers of all kinds. So now you can get out and have fun and exercise your pet very safely. Go to our website, www.allpawspettalk.com, and go to the sponsor page and hit the bike tow leash banner, or call toll-free 857-245-3364. That number once again, toll-free 857-245-3364.
She said, rearrange my family tree, a chicken.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show, and we have with us a new guest. Her name is Toby, and she is from Crazy K Farms, who has all sorts of products and treats for pet chickens and backyard flocks.
Well, sounds interesting.
Now, what sort of things do you have there, Toby?
Well, we have a variety of products for chickens that are meant to not only improve their lives, but potentially save their lives.
Ooh, interesting. Well, I can't wait to hear about that. Okay, start with your favorite one and work up.
All right. Well, yeah, my favorite one is actually the newest one. And I had read, I think we all have on our desks, if we don't have it, we should have it, a book by Gail Damereau called The Chicken Health Handbook.
Yep.
And I refer to that all the time. And I've known for years that bumblefoot's a problem, and it's really difficult to heal, and that if a chicken gets a foot wound, if left untreated, the mortality rate is 50%.
Wow.
That just blows me away. The mortality rate should not be that high. Well, you dig in, why is it? It's because it's a staph infection on the foot, and chickens walk on the ground and in their own poo, and really very difficult to keep the medication on that wound and to keep the wound from spreading, keep the infection in the wound from spreading into the foot, into the bone, and then that would cause death.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a girl here, and like all of our products, usually we'll get a call from somebody asking me, hey, have you thought of this, have you thought of that, and I keep a little checklist. So I can't really develop something until it happens to one of my chickens, because I could be able to do some R&D and find out what the best kind of fit would be and the best kind of material, et cetera, et cetera. So we ended up taking in a girl. Her name, believe it or not, is called Running Chicken. She doesn't walk. Just runs. Uh-huh. And she prefers to run on hard asphalt-like surfaces, and she had a bumble on her foot that went completely through the webbing. So it was on the bottom of her foot, and then the little bit of webbing that they had between their toes, all the way to the top. And I got on the chicken forums, many different chicken forums, and they all had pretty much the same theme, which I found mortifying. Maybe you won't, but I did. But people are performing surgery on their chickens, and they're doing it without anesthesia. And there's anecdotal evidence that this works and anecdotal evidence that that works, and you take penicillin 5 and you inject it into the wound. No, you got to cut the wound with an X-Acto knife all the way through and pull out the, well, you know, I wasn't going to do that to my chicken. I took her to the vet. So I took her to the vet, and they cleaned out the wound, and then they take vet wrap, and they wrap it around, but they say, oh, well, you got to stretch it first, and then if it gets wet, it'll contract. You got to be really careful. Like, well, how do I keep it dry then?
I mean, it's a chicken. It's not like a dog that has four legs and can, like, not stand on that one.
Right. You're not going to be hopping around on one foot.
Especially a chicken named Running Chicken.
I developed what I now call the Birdie Booty. And it's a neoprene shoe. And it's, if it's on the left foot, it's made for the left foot. For the right foot, it's made for the right foot because the toes are different. It's like people. And with the help of my vet over the phone, she said, well, make sure you leave enough room for the packing, et cetera. And with her help and her input, I was able to develop this booty that enables you to put the medicine on, put a cotton ball in, because it's really nice to have that cotton ball to soak up the medicine to keep it on, but also for cushioning. And then you can even put a little one or two rounds of vet wrap and then stick it in the shoe, and this shoe will keep the foot dry. It will enable the medication to stay put. And most importantly, it'll keep the poo out and keep whatever, you know, infectious, disgusting stuff that they would walk through away from that wound.
Now, how did we get this, you know, where, give us your website and all of that sort of thing.
Well, the website's based off of the first product that I created for chickens. It's called the Hen Saver. So it's www.hensaver.com.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Now,
I was just at Global Pet, and a lot of people aren't very familiar with chickens as pets yet, or backyard flocks. But what was so interesting is even the people who just had chickens and didn't know very much, they'd say, well, what is that for? And I'd say, well, that saves the hen, et cetera. Well, do you have one or two hens, I'd ask them, that is kind of going bald on the back? And they'd go, oh, yes. Well, that's because she's favored. You've got yourself a sexy chicken. That's the one the rooster likes best.
Now, what if they go bald on the back and there's no roosters? Because I had a few of those.
that's true. It was really interesting because I had to bring three chickens this time. I normally bring two. And, you know, even with two chickens, you've got a pecking war. But with three chickens, it's more obvious. One's at the top, one's in the middle, one's at the bottom. And my girls, they make the best models because, sure enough, every few minutes one of them would walk up and peck the other. And where they pecked was on the back. But there was a hen saver on them because they were modeling them for the show. And so quite a few people would go, oh, that's what they're for. Like, well, that's one of the things,
And that's for city kids who've never been around any kind of bird that wasn't already processed and made into nuggets. That's where the whole term pecking order comes from. And I try to tell them that they do peck.
Do. Now, how many different products do you have?
We've got many different products. Boy, by many, I mean like six or seven. But four of them are for chickens. And so we started with the Hen Saver, which is the chicken saddle hen apron. And then we went to create a diaper. And I had a lot of people asking me, hey, can you fix like something on the back of the Hen Saver to make a diaper? And I tried. That didn't work. So we ended up with a diaper, an actual diaper. And I put a D-ring on to make it into a harness as well. And it was great. It just wrapped around the tail, and boy, I mean, nothing. Hurricane winds couldn't move this thing off the back of the chicken. It's
now,
great.
The chicken tried to get it off?
Some will just reach back and peck, and I kept thinking, well, why do they keep going back there to peck? I'm like, oh, I've covered the oil gland. Well, so then I came up with a second model called the bikini model, and it sits under the tail and does not cover the oil gland.
Oh.
So now you've got a choice of the wraparound, the industrial wraparound version, and the more petite bikini version.
Oh.
And that's, because people have to bring their chickens in every now and then. Some people have chickens that are in the house full time, and that's okay. I prefer not to, but I end up with that anyways. And
on our website, my husband and I do petoftheday.com, and we know that there are some people that have chickens that are actually therapy pets that go and visit people. So that would be perfect to have if you wanted to bring your chicken into a nursing home for people to pet it.
That's very interesting. There's a woman, a teacher, who sent me a note. She had hatched some of our eggs. We sell our eggs for hatching. And she had purchased eggs, and they hatched these little chickies, and then the kids didn't want to get rid of them. So they grew up, and they started taking them for educational purposes and visiting other schools, et cetera. And she said that the diaper has been a lifesaver, because now they have the diaper on. She could take it into the classroom. They could take it to a hospital. So these chicks that they've hatched are now these chicks that they're using for educational purposes with the diapers, which is very cool.
Now, how often do you recommend changing the diaper on your chicken, say you have it in the house full-time or wherever?
That is really chicken-specific. And I'll tell you, I got three hens. Uh-huh. I have one who doesn't even need a diaper. I'm telling you, her poos are Teflon-coated. They don't stick to anything. Yeah, she's just great. And
wow.
Then I have another one whose poos are a half a glass of water.
Uh-huh.
With some solids mixed in. And her diaper has to be changed really frequently. And it's not that it leaks, it's just that it's high volume.
Right.
And then I have another chicken who is sort of halfway between the two of those, which has just that the full range. If you look up the normal poo chart, have you ever seen that? There's a somewhere out there,
yep.
There's a chicken poo chart. She has that full range of normal poos. Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
And she's got that. Yeah, her range is from 1 to 10, like in within 2 hours.
And so, you know.
And they're all eating the same stuff.
So it definitely is a chicken-to-chicken matter. Well, guys, we are just about out of time for this segment. Toby, will you stick with us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh. Excellent. We'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm a green chicken.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk. And before I forget, I want to tell people not only is the website allpawspettalk.com, but if you want to listen to the shows anytime, anywhere, on your phone, on your computer, 24 hours a day, it's at WPETTalkRadio.com. We have a streaming there. So, and you'll hear all the different shows and so it's not all chickens on All Paws Pet Talk, but Country Joe's show is chickens and geese and turkeys and all sorts of poultry.
Yes, that's fun. So, but that's interesting. Glenn, I was just looking up this buff turkey here. I think I got it. Did they just call it a buff or is that a different breed of turkey?
Buff or Jersey buff. But yeah, the names are kind of used interchangeably. They really were originally two separate birds, but, You know, that's kind of the way it works today.
Yeah, I see where it says the status is critical. Wow,
that's
interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. And you say now, what was the population on them at one time? Less than 20?
Less than 20 probably is all I could locate in about 1988, 89. And that was down from well over 50,000 counted breeders. And that's the ones that were officially counted in the 1950s. And
wow.
So it took a big nosedive, but all heritage breed turkeys did during the 80s. They got to very, very low numbers, and into the early 90s, it was very critical with the heritage turkeys. When ALBC did their survey of actually hatcheries hatching them, it was scary numbers of the people. You know, there were some show people that were keeping them, but you know, when you get to the Narragansetts and blue slates and black Spanish, some of those were just very low numbers.
Wow,
and
that's
they're
interesting.
Bouncing back. I mean, it's sad to say, but the way that they got saved was not the way I thought it was, but to get people to try and eat them. Mm-hmm. And then people realized, hey, these are a better bird. And so they started coming back that way. And I was more concerned about keeping them all alive. And, and it took eating a few of them to change the thread and to actually save them.
So. Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I'm going to try some. I really, you know, those are, that's my project this year, you know, because I built another big coop just for
them. I think you'll enjoy both their personalities and their eating qualities. I mean, both ways, I think you'll find that they're a higher quality bird.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting that even though the numbers had gotten down so low, like you were mentioning earlier in the show, the heritage breeds tend to have better immune systems and deal with different conditions much better than the ones that were so prevalent and so often bred.
Yeah, bred for a short
and
life.
That has been a surprising thing for some to realize. Virginia Tech did some studies on, you know, some actual lab studies on the abilities and found that, like the Black Spanish, which I told them, I said, I suspect that the Black Spanish are going to have more resistance to things. And that's what they found out with their lab studies and with their actual grow-outs at Virginia Tech, that these were actually superior birds to what, you know, they'd been kind of dismissed. And they were, you know, hopefully, I mean, they realized that they had found a superior bird.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the chicken line, what would you say is the rarest chicken right now going? I heard it was the golden campine, and then you hear other people. And I was always curious to know what the rarest chicken was, you know? Do you happen to know that?
That's a good question. You know, the golden campine still has a few. Silver campines are probably rarer than golden campines.
Uh-huh.
The campines in general are in pretty low numbers. I think one of the rarer chickens in this country right now is probably the dumpies that have the short legs. The Scots dumpies is the official name, I guess. They're still hanging in there, but barely. We've been trying to increase and spread some, you know, flocks around to get them started because they
Well, you need to change the name of the breed.
The name of the breed, Dumpies, doesn't really trip people's trigger, but they are an interesting chicken because they have the genetic trait for the very short legs. So they look like they're kind of crawling on the ground, which is actually called the creeper gene, so that makes them have the short legs. But they're rare. Some of the birds are making a comeback that were really rare a few years ago, like the crane copies, and interestingly enough, barn builders are starting to come back a little bit, and they were fairly rare for a while. So some of them are making a comeback. Chanticleers, which teetered on the edge of extinction, are now making a real strong comeback, and people realizing they're good meat birds and good for cold hardiness. And, you know, those people who live in where it gets very cold, the chanticleers have what's called a cushion comb that's just right next to the head and just doesn't have anything to freeze off. So those have some advantages.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the red cat?
There are other breeds that are hanging in there, but
the red cats, they're pretty critical, aren't they?
I think, are pretty critical, yes. And I would like to see, I think they're a very functional chicken for somebody who likes to free range and can handle the, red caps aren't what I call, I use the term loosely, an affectionate chicken that likes a lot of people contact. I mean, they appreciate you, but they don't want you reaching down and touching them. And
they're not the black chickens.
They're not a lap chicken. You're right. I mean, as a kid, I had speckled Sussex that would follow me around, and if I'd sit down out in the garden, they'd hop up on my knee. You know, a red cap probably isn't going to do that. But pleasantly surprised, I found another rare chicken that I have, the silver-penciled Hamburgs, not the silver-spangled, but silver-penciled. They aren't known for their niceness, but the other day I was out cleaning the pen, and one of them hopped up, and I thought, man, this is kind of strange because Hamburgs are not known for their gentleness, but they can be, I think, in some cases. A lot of it depends on the time you spend with them, whether you want, you know, whether they'll require a little more human contact, perhaps. So.
Well, my campines are.
In the marketing world, you ought to rename the whole breed for dumpy chickens into the chicken munchkins.
Chicken munchkins. Yeah.
Well, there are munchkin cats now, and they're getting really popular. Joe, if you had your choice of all the different kinds, now if you just had to choose one, what would your choice be?
I don't know these red caps. I love the golden campines. It's such a tie. I don't know. I've never had red caps, and they fascinate me. They always have. But the golden campines are so tame. Mine jump up on me, and I carry them around. But I've never seen the silver campines. I've seen pictures of them. But do you have those also?
Yes. I kind of am a collector type. When I get one, I like to have, it's kind of like a stamp collector. You like to have the whole set. Campines come in gold and silver, and I have both colors. It's kind of a quirk, I guess. I do the same thing with, like, Orpingtons and Dorkings. I have a whole slew of different varieties of Dorkings and the Orpington chickens as well.
Well, I'll probably be getting some silver ones because I got the golden. So, you know, like you say, I got to get the whole set. So, so I'm going
to
try that
tend
too.
To be that way, I guess, or chicken collectors. Once you get hooked, it's kind of hard to stop.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know. Exactly. You know, I started out, like I told Karen and everybody, I started out with like a few chickens and, you know, it got up to about 800-900 chickens in about, you know, a few years.
Yeah,
and it's still going. Now I'm branching over toward the turkeys, the rare turkeys now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I do raise my meat turkeys and my meat chickens, but here we go, you know. Now I'm looking at these nice heritage turkeys, and I'm thinking, oh, boy, you know, I got to have the, it's like every collector, right? Like a coin collector or
that's
whatever.
Right.
You know, you start looking at them and say, gee, I got to own one. You know, well, never one. You always got to get a pair. You know?
Mm-hmm. Pretty soon you're building more and more pens or adding on to sheds or doing something.
Yeah, that's say. I don't have a boat. You know, green. Here I'm living in Florida. I'm one of the only guys that don't have a boat because I use all the money to build pens, you know. That's
mm-hmm.
what I do. So, you know, that's where I am every day is out there playing with chickens. And
now, Glenn, I had a question for you. Are there some of the heritage breeds that would be better if there are people in the city who have, you know, a small lot or a small area to have their chickens?
Certain breeds do better and perhaps, you know, would be better suited for that. Some of the smaller sized chickens do well in a backyard and can be somewhat inconspicuous to their neighbors and maybe won't destroy a flower bed or a backyard as easily. The Hamburgs, you know, come to mind for that. And the Polish chickens, which a lot of times get the Polish crested get this reputation as just being ornamental, but can be very functional and very. I always like to encourage people who have a small backyard, some of breeds like that, because, and especially if they have children, because you can reach down and pick up a Polish hen, and they just love, you know, that human contact and can be a real buddy to you. And they're not going to go out and destroy your prized flowers as much because, well, for one, they have trouble seeing with their big crests. But you know, still, they're semi-handicapped put aside. They make great little ornaments in your backyard and are not so frisky that they destroy things. And you get and I'm not picking on the big old barred rocks or something like that, but they've got a little bit more where they more size to them, and they might dig up your flowers a little easier than some of the smaller, more ornamental type chickens that can still be functional, but yet pretty and decorative and friendly.
That's right. You know, gentlemen, I hate to tell you all this, but we are coming to the end of the show for this week.
Let's stretch it to 2 hours.
Glenn, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Do you have a website or anything
enjoyable.
Where people can find you?
What's that?
Do you have a website?
It's www.sandhillpreservation.com.
Oh, good.
Excellent. And, you know, anybody with any questions, you can always go on to allpawspettalk.com. Scroll down. There's a form right there on the homepage.
And Glenn, we'll be having you back on the show, I'm positive, many times, because I've got a million more questions for you, and I'm sure everybody out
glad
there
will
have some too.
All right. Well, folks, we'll be back next week with more. And Joe, will you say it with me? May the flock be with you.